This is the Broski and Moussan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
President Biden is announcing his executive actions right now, Christina.
Yes.
This is about gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he's got a lot of people there have been the victims of gun violence
mm-hmm.
while he's making this announcement. Do we want to talk a little bit about this before we get into other things?
I don't know.
Well, the thing is,
I'm a little torn on this, John.
When they announce that the president's going to announce something, they tell you what he's going to announce.
Mm-hmm.
So we already know what he's going to announce, and these are executive actions which might require a little explanation.
Yes. Well, so what he is going to announce today are not executive orders, and there is a difference between an executive action and an executive order. An executive order is published in the Federal Register and is legally binding until another president comes in and undoes it. An executive action bears extremely little weight. And I actually found this in a story about President Trump, the clarification of this, because President Trump did something, did an executive action on something, and the media went haywire with it and said, well, it's all, you know, this is just, it's a whole bunch of
nothing.
Hot air.
It's
a whole bunch of nothing.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's going on today. That's why I'm kind of torn to talk about this, because what President Biden is talking about bears very little weight when it comes to guns in this country. And so it's a whole lot of hot air. He's got a whole lot of people gathered for a media event. And that's exactly what this is. It's a media event about not a whole lot.
Yeah. Well, we can go over what some of these are.
Okay.
You know, because like I say, these are not executive orders.
Right.
Which and so when you say executive actions, I think people hear executive order or they just think they're both the same.
And they're not.
Yeah, they're not the same.
They're not the same.
So executive action number one, the Justice Department within 30 days will issue a proposed rule to help stop the proliferation of ghost guns. So they're going to issue within 30 days a proposed rule, which you don't even need to know if it's an executive order or an action because it's a proposed rule.
Correct.
Okay. So he hopes these things will be taken up by Congress, I guess.
I guess.
Number two, the Justice Department within 60 days will issue a proposed rule to make clear when a device marketed as a stabilizing brace effectively turns a pistol into a short-barreled rifle. So again, a proposed rule.
Right, and that's in 60 days.
Yeah. Number three, the Justice Department within 60 days will publish model red flag legislation. So they're going to give, here's a model. For red flag, this is like you can...
To states.
Yeah.
And it says four states.
Yeah.
Is this going to be taken up with Congress? Is this going to be a suggestion for states to issue within their own legislatures? I'm not sure. But once again, it is a
proposed model.
Yeah. In 60 days.
Yeah. And this red flag is when you can turn somebody in, family member, somebody you think is dangerous, right? Number four, the administration is investing in evidence-based community violence interventions.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that means.
Well, we're doing something similar like that here in Fresno, right? Where we're like paying people not to create violence.
Right.
I think that that's the type of thing that it's talking about.
But I mean, the language of this, the administration is investing. We don't know exactly what that means. You know, investing generally means money, but it doesn't really say that.
Correct.
Are they just investing time? Investing promotional material, who knows? So number five, the Justice Department will issue an annual report on firearms trafficking.
Okay. I'm going to guess. Can I just throw something out there? I'm going to guess, since it says an annual report, that this is a report that's been annual for every year. Yeah? So this is nothing new.
Maybe not.
It is the annual report that comes out, annually.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're going to issue their annual report, which maybe they do every year.
Which happens every year.
Yeah.
So it's actually more like five executive actions, not really six executive actions, because the thing that happens annually is going to happen annually.
Yeah.
Okay.
And number six, the president will nominate David Chipman to serve as director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which he would have done without this.
Correct.
Right?
So we really have four executive actions, not six. because these were things, two of the things were going to happen anyway, and the other four are things we're just going to study.
Yeah.
Or, great.
Yeah. Or invest in, whatever that means.
So for everybody thinking that the world is turning upside down today because there's going to be more laws against guns, what is happening today is a dog and pony show, and really nothing's going to happen. Maybe in 30 or 60 days something might happen, but today, nothing is happening.
Yeah, just John Brodsky's theory on everything that's going on, from COVID relief to infrastructure to guns to whatever topic you want to bring up, is all about the filibuster. You know, to me, they are trying, you know.
Okay.
So he's laying these things out there.
It all comes back.
I want Congress to do something. And of course, when Congress doesn't do something, then he will be able to come back and say, look, I can't get them to do anything. I'm going to have to do executive orders on my own. I don't know if I can do it with these issues. They won't say yes to COVID relief. They won't say yes to infrastructure. They won't say yes to doing reasonable, common sense gun laws. So there's only one thing we are left to do. We have to do away with the filibuster so we can get this stuff done, because the party of no will not help us help America. So to me, this is all part of that effort. You know, they keep giving, you know, the devil's in the details on gun laws. You know, you could say common sense gun laws, all these things, but it's what they put in there. When they call COVID relief, what's that bill really about? It's 90% other stuff. When they say infrastructure, what it's really about? 90% other stuff. When they say common sense gun control, what's really in there? It's going to be something Republicans can't say yes to, right? There's going to be it'll be 800 pages of common sense, and none of which will be common sense. So
great.
But just get back to your main point, Christina, which this, maybe it's not even confusion. When they say executive action, it's not the same as executive order. This is a bunch of nothing right now, but I think he's laying the groundwork for something later when they can't get Congress to act because of those nasty, dirty Republicans who don't care about anybody.
Correct.
Right. So on that note, do we just want to move on?
I think so. I mean, I don't know. Do we want to listen in
quickly? You want to
listen
a little bit here?
Okay, let's listen in.
I'm going to use all the resources at my disposal as president to keep the American people safe from gun violence. But there's much more that Congress can do to help that effort. And they can do it right now.
See, there he
goes.
They've
offered plenty of thoughts and prayers, members of Congress.
I want Congress to do this. I don't want to have to do it.
Not a single new
I don't want to have to do it, but I don't know if I can get them to do it.
Yeah, I can't.
Enough prayers. Time for some action. I believe the Senate should immediately pass three House-passed bills to close loopholes that allow gun purchasers to bypass the background checks. The vast majority of the American people, including gun owners, believe there should be background checks before you purchase a gun.
Like I say, the problem, though, the devil's in the details. You know, it's just like when he talks about the infrastructure bill. He talks about the infrastructure, and everybody likes that. He doesn't talk about the 90% of the bill that isn't infrastructure.
Correct.
And so same thing here. He's, look, 90% of the people believe, yeah, well, if that's all you wanted to do, we'd probably be able to get this done. Unfortunately, your guys in Congress cram a bunch of other stuff in here that nobody wants, and it doesn't get passed. But again, I think he's just laying the groundwork. So when he comes back with an executive order or end the filibuster, everybody goes, well, what else was he going to do, Christina?
I know. What else was he going to do?
Republicans, how do you get anything done with those guys around?
They're bought by the NRA and the gun lobbying groups, and they're owned, those Republicans, and they just can't do anything for meaningful gun reform.
Yeah, so I wouldn't worry a lot about what's happening today, except in the context of where is this going to go down the road, right?
And
it's all, I think, planned out to get all of this stuff done without a filibuster at some point in the future, because what else could we do, Christina? What else could we do? We didn't want to change the filibuster. We don't want to have to do it.
I know.
It's nothing that
they're making us.
There's no enjoyment about this.
They're making us.
Yeah, they're making it. That's their fault. We changed the filibuster. So anyway, we're going to move on to Tiger Woods here.
Tiger Woods.
Okay. So let's take a break. Tiger Woods, now we know he was going like, what, 86 miles an hour? Is that the official speed?
86 miles per hour.
It's from the black box, okay?
Yeah.
He did not, and I guess will not get a ticket.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
All right, as we discuss Tiger Woods, we now get the results of that black box. They got their hands on the black box. And the last time we talked about this, we said, I wonder if they're going to get their hands on the black box. I mean, we thought that they would, but there were people that said maybe they won't.
Because the owner of the car have to give their permission.
Correct.
And the owner of the car was a car company. It wasn't Tiger.
It was for the golf tournament.
Right. So did the golf tournament own it, or did they have a deal with the dealership? Probably some dealership probably provided the car.
Right.
But apparently, you know, they probably gave their permission, right?
So they got their hands on the black box, and lo and behold, it looks as if his car was driving at speeds of around 86 miles per hour, maybe 87 miles per hour in a 45 zone. Now, the car was going downhill. I will give that. Going downhill, it is very, very difficult to keep a car at 45 miles per hour. I always find that interesting when they put really low speeds downhill. I feel like, oh yeah, that's just a speed trap. That's for a speed trap. But going 86 miles per hour is excessive. 60, I would say, yeah, I could see that. 86, not really. You got your foot on the accelerator and you're pushing the limits, right? So the car was going 86 miles per hour downhill in a 45 zone when it hit the curb, flipped and rolled. And Tiger Woods sustained very serious injuries. With that said, the LA Sheriff's Department says a ticket will not be issued of any kind, whether for excessive speeding or speeding at all. And people are mad. They think that Tiger should get a speeding ticket, at least a speeding ticket for this accident. You have your hands on the black box. You know how fast he was going. You know what speed he was going when airbags deployed. After it rolled, you know, and it was somewhere between 81 and 86 at that point. So at the time of, you know, when the wheel hit the curb, it was probably going faster, slowed down a bit when it hit, you know, when it hit the ground and airbags deployed, right? So you know he was going really fast. And he's not going to get a speeding ticket, they say, because an officer didn't witness it. They have to witness this. What do you think?
Well, I mean, if that's the law, then they can't, right? I mean, if that's the law, they can't. But, gosh, you know, when you have an accident, and by the way, don't they have their ways of determining speed just by measuring things? Not that that has anything to do with the ticket. But,
like, you know, skid marks and things like that? Yes.
Well, yeah, like a lot of times there will be skid marks. Now, they say there weren't skid marks. He didn't even attempt to slow down, they say. Right. So that was part of this investigation, too. But they know when it hit the curb and they know how far the car went. And a lot of times, you know, that's why they block off the scene, because they're doing all these measurements. You can figure out how fast a car was going by how much the car rolled. Right. So it seems to me he should at least be given a ticket. But if the law is, according to them, that a police officer has to witness the speeding to be able to give a ticket, then their hands are tied. But that seems like kind of a weird law when you have it. Like, you know, it's one thing if somebody calls and says, hey, I just saw John Broski going down my street. He was going 80. And would you come give him a ticket? And then I can understand that, well, we can't do it unless we see it. I can't just do it because Christina called because she doesn't like John. But when you have an accident scene and you have, you know, the car over here and hit the curb here and we know how fast it was going, now we have the black box. That seems like an odd law to have, doesn't it?
Well, we have a lot of odd laws in California. I mean, I look at, when I see this story, I see California at its finest. Here you have a guy that was going nearly double the speed limit, gets in a major accident, himself sustains serious injuries, and even the sheriff's department says, well, nobody else was involved in it. It was just, I mean, you know, he received the punishment already, which I would agree. I mean, he was punished for speeding as far as injuries go. However, what kind of message are you sending to people if you're not even going to issue Tiger Woods a citation here? Gavin's Law. We talked about this yesterday. Gavin's Law in this state. You know, you hit and run and you kill someone. You leave somebody on the side of the road to die. And it's now going through its second time around to correct and fix that. You know, you get the max you can get is 4 years for leaving the scene of an accident where you hit someone and you kill them. You leave the scene. The most you can get is 4 years. You can negotiate down to 3 years. And actually, after time served, it's actually 13 months. You know, there is no punishment in this state for crimes. They look at this and they say, yeah, okay, he was going double the speed limit. But, you know, nobody really witnessed it, even though the black box tells us exactly how fast he was going. And nobody else was involved in this. And he didn't hurt anybody else. So, you know, it's done. This is California. It's that and it's Tiger Woods. You know, people feel like Tiger Woods is getting off the hook because he's Tiger Woods. And I think to myself, well, there's an aspect of that. I think there is truth to that. But it's also California. Can't you see California at its finest here in that we really don't punish people anymore?
Yeah, well, I have to let them off the hook if they really can't give them a ticket because somebody really does have to witness it. But it seems like if that's the case, that's something else that needs to be straightened out. But like Gavin's Law, legislators don't seem to be interested in straightening things out. You know, it's like Gavin's Law makes so much sense. Like if you're drunk driving and you hit somebody, the law makes it almost mandatory that you leave the scene because you're going to be punished less for leaving the scene than for staying if you've been drinking, right? Particularly if you've been drinking. So if a drunk driver, you know, you're almost incentivized to leave the scene. And they won't fix that. And it's just a no-brainer, isn't it? There's nothing.
One would think.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer to fix that.
But now it's going through its second round trying to get approval.
Right.
Went through last year, couldn't get the votes. It's back again trying to get votes.
And here's another one. You've got a guy speeding 87 in a 45, and you can't give him a ticket, even though you have all the evidence you need to prove he was doing it. There is something else. If you can't give him a ticket, that needs to be straightened out because somebody should get a ticket for that.
But it's as if, you know, and this is LA County. So, you know, I guess they have different views about these things than we do here in the Central Valley. However, you know, it is, they don't want to. They don't really care. I mean, you know, and so now, you know, where does this leave this case? Nothing. It's done. It's all here's the information. It's all done. Right?
Yeah.
Nothing more to see here. We're done.
But you would think, like if you're the sheriff down there, you would go, look, I can't give him a ticket. Something should be done about this, but nobody is even asking this question or demanding that something be done.
Right.
And maybe it's because, you know, in Sacramento, they won't do anything anyway because they don't seem to be interested in punishing anybody for anything. So maybe that's why. You would think the sheriff would go, you know, this really is a case where somebody should at least get a ticket, but I can't give them a ticket because the law won't let me.
Right.
So we need to fix the law. Just like Gavin's like, we need to fix the law. But you go to Sacramento, they just, you know, they don't care. 490-5858. And I just asked the question, you know, why do you think Tiger's not getting a ticket? Is it because of that? Or is it because he's Tiger? I kind of feel like if it was John Broski, I'd be getting a ticket.
You know, and here's the other thing, too. Have you noticed, like, cops out catching speeders these days?
I never see anybody out there. I never see any traffic cops anymore.
I'm wondering if in this state we're just kind of given up on traffic laws.
Or maybe there's no cops left to do it because it's hard to get cops because of the way people are treated in this state. And but I don't see a lot of traffic cops out there. I can't remember the last time I saw one.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Talking about Tiger Woods. We now know that he was going 86, 87 miles an hour in a 45. He will not be issued a ticket because they say an officer has to see it to issue the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just saying, well, maybe that's something that needs to be fixed, like Gavin's Law needs to fix this hit-and-run law. Sacramento doesn't seem to be too interested in doing things about that.
No.
Hello, Victor. You're on KMJ.
Hey, I'm not quite understanding what you just said. because every truck driver starts his day with a electric log, and we get pulled into the scales, and they want to do an audit on that electric log, and you show clearly that you're traveling over the speed limit, you will get a citation through that electric log.
Yeah.
And it's not something that they see, but they do see it through the electronics.
Yeah.
So same difference is they're seeing it through his electronics, and I don't see the difference in what you're saying.
Right.
However,
I don't either.
With great bodily injury, it doesn't matter whether it's a passenger or yourself. You still have great bodily injury in an accident. So that changes the dynamics of the accident and the amount of dollars that have in your damage. So that changes the accident as well. Now, another thing is the physician that did the surgery had to do a toxicology in order to the anesthesiologist to put him under for surgery. So they have proof whether he had anything in his system.
That might be private. That might be private medical information,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know if it is because of the dynamics of the accident.
Yeah, and I don't know that anybody even tried to get it. Never saw anything about anybody trying to get information about that. They weren't interested in testing him at the scene. They said he wasn't under the influence of anything without testing him, even though he was having trouble remembering even the accident that it had happened. So, Victor, that's good information. I was wondering about, you know, trucks, like because they can cite you without seeing you. Because that's why you have those electronic logs, right? So they can see how fast you've been going. And anytime they check you, they can look back and issue a citation.
Exactly, they can.
Yeah.
So by them saying that they can't, it doesn't seem like a very good answer to me.
No, I'm with you. And, you know, and it seems like, again, like if you can do that to a truck driver, why wouldn't you change the law? Now, I'm advocating that people get tickets.
Yeah, no, nobody wants a ticket. But yeah, it's a good question, though, because I think that's what a lot of people are asking themselves right now. If not Tiger, why me? Like, why do I not fit this criteria? You know, why is he exempt and I'm not? It feels like, you know, when we get pulled over, we're getting a ticket. Victor, I've got the log. I can be ticketed without them seeing me. So why do the rules apply to me but not to him? I think that's what a lot of people are thinking on this.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe it's something that you need to incorporate in the law that black boxes can be used against people, and maybe there's a little problem with that. You know, I don't know. But it just seems like you have the information. We know he was speeding even without the black box. All you got to do is go down to the accident scene, see how far the car rolled. You know, it wasn't going 40 miles an hour.
If he had hurt somebody else in this,
then it'd be
you bet this would be a different story.
Yeah.
Why is it not the same story, even though he didn't hurt somebody?
Exactly.
He hurt himself.
George, you're on KMJ.
Hey, John. Hey, Christina. Hold on. I'm on speakerphone. Let me turn that off.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
All right. There you go. Sorry about that. I know that just from personal experience, there are certain days when I get off work, when I finish talking with someone, I am just over anxious. I'm stressed out. I'm aggravated. And one thing I do, and I know a lot of guys do for stress relief, is they'll get in their car and drive as fast as they can. And that adrenaline rush just sort of, you know, calms us down. I know Christina probably doesn't do that, judging by the way she was talking. Nothing wrong with that at all.
I'm the old lady.
They're the people we honk at on the road. No,
that's
anyway.
Probably true, yes.
But no, I'm just guessing. This is speculation. But what if Tiger Woods just had some sort of stressful day and was doing this for stress relief and going, you know what, I'm going to go on this little road where there's nobody here. I'm not going to hurt anyone. I'm going to go as fast as I can and just let it all out. Let it out. Get it over. And finally, he messed it up. I know from personal experience, I rolled the truck doing that. It was me and my sister. I was going 115 in a 55, And I took the turn at 65.
Yikes.
And obviously that was a little too fast, and we rolled the truck. I sustained a little bit of injury. The truck was totaled. My sister was fine. And the cops showed up. I did not get a ticket for that.
Hmm.
And I'm just guessing that because I didn't look like I was some drug abuser, some gangbanger or anything, that I just looked like I was out there for a joyride, was honest, wasn't trying to give the cops a runaround. They kind of said, you know what, let's give this guy a break. I don't know. I didn't ask the cops that. I just know that from experience, that's what I was doing, and I didn't get a ticket for that. So I don't think he's not getting a ticket because he's Tiger Woods. I think he's not getting a ticket because the cops are saying, you know what, let's not deal with this.
Maybe.
Well, I can think of a lot of, like, what-if scenarios, right? He was in a rush. We know that he was late to meet Aaron Rodgers to golf, right? There was some kind of maybe tournament.
They were filming some kind of golf episode.
Got it. He was late because people at his hotel said that he was in a hurry. He was also driving a new car. You know, he may have been testing the limits of the new car. He may have said, hey, this drive's nice. Let me see what this sucker can do. You know, there could be a whole slew of reasons as to why, what prompted him to be speeding at the time of the accident. To me, at the end of the day, he caused an accident. And even though, thank God, nobody else was involved in this accident but him, he still caused an accident that closed down a road for hours, caused manpower and time, taxpayer dollars, to go and investigate. And as a taxpayer, it would be nice if Tiger Woods was punished for something of this. Now, I understand that he hurt himself very severely in this accident. And I get that. He's been punished in one way. I'd like to see, like, monetary punishment of some kind for this. Typically, that's done with a speeding ticket.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't really monetarily punish Tiger Woods
with a speeding ticket. But as a taxpayer, I'd like to see some monetary, you know, damage done, just in the fact that you took time out of people's work days to come to this accident that was unnecessary because you were speeding. Closed down a road to traffic, caused a lot of people inconvenience, and detectives, investigators, first responders, doctors, hospitals. I mean, there's a lot of unnecessary costs that happened because you were speeding 68 miles per hour in a 45 zone.
And 86.
86, yeah. Thank you. I said 60 yeah. something, didn't I? Yeah,
that,
no.
That almost sounded 86, not too bad.
That almost sounded not too bad. You're right. 86 in a 45 zone. A lot of unnecessary stuff happened here. I'd like to see some kind of punishment happen.
Yeah, well, like we say, we always talk about, you know, is there a little grace speed that you get over the speed limit? You know, if it's a 45, I think you can go 50.
I'd say I would have been okay. 55, I would have been okay.
But 55, you'd probably get a ticket if somebody saw you, right?
Right. 65, I could understand because it was downhill. 70, no. 75, no. 80, no. 86, absolutely not.
490-5858. Cindy, you're on KMJ.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to share a story with you. I was in an accident, right before COVID, and I had a 360 camera on my dash, my own camera, that not just doesn't go out the front or the back, it goes all the way around the vehicle. My insurance company would not accept that. The Fresno police officer who saw the accident said, hey, to help you out, I'm going to walk up and down this street because I want your insurance company to see the condition of this road when you pulled out. Nicely, he walked all up and down the street, recorded it, and said, they can subpoena this. They wouldn't accept that. But what they would accept was there was a business owner across the street that happened to see the accident, grace of God. She comes out and says, hey, if you need footage, I've got it on my business camera. They accepted that one. And I was seen as no fault. Before I could get a hold of her footage and submit it, I was seen as equal fault.
Wow.
That's California state law. That's a California insurance company. They have to follow state law.
Right.
So Right. So anyway, just thought that was an interesting thing to throw in there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. No, that's very interesting.
Bye-bye. Hello, Rufus. You're on KMJ.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, a lot of speculation going on here. I'm wondering if anyone had asked the question, is the black box even admissible in court? I'll be honest, I never even heard of the technology until this crash.
Yeah, that's like I say, it might be a good question, but don't they know, just based on the accident scene, they used to come up with all these footage things before we had black boxes, by measuring how far the car was from the initial impact, you know, skid marks, all those kinds of things. So I think they could, you know, do a pretty good guesstimate and just take the lower end of the guesstimate to come up with something reasonable. You know, the guy wasn't going 10 miles an hour when the car's like 300 feet from the initial impact, right? I mean, I'm just throwing out, I don't know what it was. It was a long way.
I'm not a crime scene investigator. I don't know how that works, but my guess would be that the black box wasn't admissible in court. And I could speculate that the insurance gave, or the owners of the vehicle gave it up to absolve themselves, perhaps. You know, they could say, you know, and that side of it, they say Tiger was going excessive, so they're no longer responsible. Maybe it falls on Tiger in that sense.
Well, if you're the owner of the car and they ask for the black box, I think you do want to give it up because you want to make sure that the blame isn't for some defect in the car, right?
I think the black box is admissible in court, and this is a reason why. We had the terrible Greyhound accident on 99. Our friend Stuart Chandler represented some of the families in that civil case. The black box on board that Greyhound bus, I believe, was admissible. Now, I can't remember, though, if they actually used it in court, because I can't remember if it worked. It may not have worked, but I believe Stuart saying that had it worked, it would have been admissible in court. So I believe that they are admissible in court. But once again, what the sheriff's department says is that state law doesn't allow them to issue a ticket anyways if one of their officers or somebody did not witness the accident. And nobody witnessed the accident. Yeah. So to me, this is a discussion as well about laws in this state that need to be changed.
Yeah. Anybody interested in fixing that little imperfection in the law?
I'm going to guess not, because nobody's interested really in perfecting the you hit someone, you kill a pedestrian, you drive off, and you leave them for dead, and the most you can get is 4 years.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Okay, we're talking about Tiger Woods' car crash. We now know that he was traveling at about 86 miles per hour in a 45 zone when the accident happened. He will not be issued a ticket. Sheriff's Department says they can't because nobody witnessed it. 490-5858, Jeremy, you're on KMJ.
Christina. I want to have some of what you're having this morning in that coffee, I tell you.
What am I having?
I don't even know why. I don't know. I don't know the Habibi in there. I don't know. But I don't even know why we're talking about it. I mean, that it happens every day. This is a common thing. Only time law enforcement can issue a citation when no one observes it is that they've been in a class. And it's a state class that certifies you to ticket after an investigation has been completed. And most of those people are CHP. Most all CHP, I think all of them have that certification. And then comparing the bus crash to the Tiger crash, kind of a whole different ball of wax. But he was in an accident. He was driving too fast, something everyone does. He got into an accident, and first responders, which is their job to respond to accidents and block off roads. If it was Joe Smith who went off the road, they would have blocked it off and delayed traffic. Is Joe Smith going to get the anger and repercussions that Tiger should get? No, he's going to be just the same as Tiger. I think they did a great job. They treated him just like anybody else. They didn't do anything special, and that's that. I mean, he was driving fast. He wasn't drunk. He was speeding. And no, they can't give him a ticket. But more than likely, if CHP would have done an investigation, they could have gave him a ticket for speeding. But that's just how it goes.
Well, that's why we're asking. It seems like a flaw in the law.
No, it's not. It's a training issue, and then a lot of local law enforcement
such as police departments or sheriff's departments, do not have anybody with a training.
The training to write a ticket based on 86 and a 45?
Based on the not observing. So there's all kinds of laws that officers can't arrest on.
Well, what kind of training do you need to look at the black box and see what the speeding was? I mean, what training does this...
You have to be certified by the state.
To read the black box?
To give a ticket. No, to give a ticket not observed. It's just...
Why can't we find somebody that can do that?
If the CHP did the investigation, they probably could have. But the sheriff's department chose to do it themselves, keep it simple, and it was done.
So if they requested some help from the CHP, if they wanted to issue a ticket, they could?
Sure. If they got the CHP involved in an investigation. Now, like, I'm going to throw it back at the fact of if this was Joe Smith driving 85 miles an hour, hurt himself in a car, would we even be having this conversation?
No.
No, we wouldn't
probably
even know.
Probably not. We wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's how they're treating it. They're treating it just as if it was Joe Smith.
Well,
and
I know, but I mean...
how they would have done it either day.
Okay, but, you know, this was dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
He could have killed somebody.
I would like Joe Smith to be punishment for some kind of crime like right?
He could have hurt somebody. That is 100% correct. Just like we can hurt somebody when we drive over the speed limit on the freeway or on the road.
I know, but I mean, like, most of us don't get upset about people getting tickets, right? Unless it's not going very fast. Like when somebody gets a 50 and a 45, you're going, that's a little ticky-tack, right?
Mm-hmm.
But nobody gets upset if you get a ticket going 85 and a 45.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
So, Jeremy, I appreciate your explanation because at least you kind of clear some stuff up for us.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Hey, coming up in a few minutes, we're going to be talking to the Madera County Health Director, and we're going to talk about this California reopening and a lot of other stuff having to do with what's going on in the state of California.
Should be a good discussion.
It's about 10 minutes away, but in the meantime, we're still talking about Tiger Woods and the fact that we now know he was going 86 miles an hour because of the black box, but they can't give him a ticket, they say, because an officer has to witness it. We just had a caller say that there's only certain people, specially trained generally with a CHP, who can issue a ticket if it's a black box ticket, which seems like a pretty simple thing. Here's the training. Look at the box. If he's going 86, give him a ticket.
Yeah, that's kind of where my head stands, too.
I guess you have to know something about black boxes. I don't know. Seems like maybe something that the legislature could clear up a little bit.
It sounds a bit bureaucratic to me.
Yeah. Bill, you're on KMJ.
Good morning. Hey, let me give a different take on it. I think there's something else that might be in play with Tiger Woods. As we all know, if you've ever been through it yourself, you get pulled over by a cop. If you're just doing a few miles an hour over, cops have the discretion to say, well, I'm not going to give you a ticket. I'm going to give you a warning. But this is a little different than just a few miles an hour over. But now you're talking about a brand name. You're talking about Tiger Woods, and he's got a lot of business tied to him. And it's not so much that he's famous, but it goes into what a district attorney has the privilege of doing, called a risk assessment. Now you get Tiger Woods. What if that ticket going over double the speed limit falls into the category of a felony because an accident occurred, even though nobody else was involved? It was just him. If it would fall into a felony, now you got to do that risk assessment that a DA would do. You're activating systems, a larger investigation, more money, more judge times, more attorneys, more state money to prosecute someone who went to the hospital. And the whole purpose for the ticket is punitive. It's to give you some loss of money to try to teach you a lesson not to do it again. So sometimes you look at that and say, okay, if I give him a ticket and it falls in a felony, I'm going to damage not only the brand name of Tiger Woods and everybody tied to him, but now he's going to lose his license. He's also going to do some time or, you know, house arrest. But you also do damage to the justice system. You're taking up court time, district attorney's times, all that. So as a hypothetical, sometimes it's better just to say, you know, maybe the time he spent in the hospital is enough to teach him a lesson to not do it again. Let's just move forward. It's going to cost way too much, and he has too many resources to fight it.
Bill, you know, you sound like a great candidate for the California legislature.
Yeah.
that must be how they think, right? Is that, you know, this is just too much trouble. We got to put people in jail and the justice system.
Right.
Let's just not do anything, you know? I mean, that's how I think they think up in Sacramento. I think you might have hit it on the button. It's just, yeah, this is just too much trouble, you know? We don't fix this stuff. We end up putting people in jail. You know how much that costs?
It costs a lot of money, John.
I know.
It costs a lot of money to prosecute people.
I think you're right.
I think you're ready to run.
Yeah.
You know,
you're right.
Sound like a great assemblyman or a senator for the state of California. I mean, I think you're right. You're right on top of it there. Abel, you're on KMJ.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So between age 18 and 25, I was into three different accidents, driving pretty recklessly on every one of them. One happened out in the county, sheriff's office, spun out and hit two cars, and it was raining, driving way too fast. Second one happened in the city of Fresno. I was once again driving way too fast, switching lanes when I shouldn't have been, and I hit two cars from behind. And then the third one, I was coming down from Oakhurst, driving recklessly, and I flipped my vehicle and I dealt with the highway patrol. All three of those, I deserved a ticket. I did not receive a ticket. I should have been cited for those violations because I was driving recklessly, A, and I didn't learn my lesson after the first two, right? Now I'm, you know, almost 40 years old, and I look back on it, and I see that that part of the system is not right. And obviously, yes, he should have received a ticket for his actions, right? And we shouldn't be hearing about it. We shouldn't have this much publicity for this particular gentleman, no matter who it was, right? But at the same time, yeah, it needs to happen across the board. Because if I would have received a citation for those moving violations at that time, maybe I wouldn't have done it again or again.
Were you given an explanation as to why you did not get a citation?
No, not at all. And I kind of feel like they think, well, you know, he's already in the accident. He's a young man. And, you know, he's got $5,700 in damages to one car and sent one person to the hospital. And, you know, the first accident was over $12,000. Paid out in settlement to one person. I had over $5,000 in damages on my vehicle. Every accident was a minimum $10,000. Minimum.
Sounds like a little hole in the law here.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
All right. Well,
thank you
least
for the show, guys. Appreciate
at least
it.
At least you grew up, I guess, huh? Eventually.
I'm still growing up, my friend.
Still growing up. Well, it sounds like you got there. Bobby, you're on KMJ.
Yeah, I want to make this real clear and straight. I mean, if you had Ms. Mims on this program here today, she'd tell you, like any other officer in the state of California, that speed posted there was designed for a reason. That is to keep that very thing from happening. And I'm going to tell you something else here today. I'm just talking how I feel. I mean, everybody else saying how they feel. I think that the state of California should come into that sheriff department right there, wherever it's at and wherever this happened, and have that department investigated the academy, whether it's the governor, the Congress, the head people in our state need to look into this. I'm not happy with that. I don't care what these callers are saying about this, that, or the other. The law is the law. And just like they were saying about Trump, nobody's above the law. Okay, fine. Just because he's Tiger Woods doesn't mean that he's above the law. Okay, now I'm going to say one more last thing here. If they can't prove that carburetor got hung up and stuck there, again, as I said when I first called, if they can't prove that carburetor got stuck and hung up, that corner is designed, they designed that speed to keep what happened to him from happening. And one last thing I just want to say, and his license needs to be pulled. I mean, the consequences of this stuff is somebody who was around that corner could have been killed, man. This is serious stuff we're talking about. And I want to just say this also. Let me just get this one thing out. And I hate to say this, but it sounds like that sheriff or that county might have knew him. And I can't prove this. But it makes us lose faith in our government when it pulls stuff like this. That man, that sheriff could have been bought off. That sheriff could have been known him. And I'm saying they need to be neutral. Our government need to be neutral when it comes to these kinds of things. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, you said a lot, Bobby.
I think you did. You said it.
And we're going to leave it at that because we're going to get to our guest coming up about California reopening, Madeira, Department of Health Director. And we got a lot of questions for her.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
We have the director of Madera County's Health Department joining us, Sarah Boss. As we, yesterday we talked about the governor's announcement on Tuesday of reopening, assuming everything, you know, continues as it does on June 15th. And we thought maybe we should get somebody in from a health department in to talk about it. And Sarah Boss has agreed to join us. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. When I heard this June 15th date, there was a lot of excitement for me, and then there was like cautious excitement because I don't want to get overly excited, and I don't like disappointment. So I think my first question, Sarah, is in your mind, is this an achievable goal of June 15th, the way that we're headed?
Yes, I think it is an achievable goal. All of the models are showing that when you factor in the percent of the population who have already had COVID, and so they have a level of immunity there, plus vaccination, that will reach a threshold of herd immunity in California towards the beginning to mid-June. And that's if vaccination rates hold steady and people continue to be interested in being vaccinated.
When you say herd immunity, I've heard all kinds of percentages, you know what I mean, about what percent. And what does that mean? Is that vaccinations? Is that people who have had it?
Both.
How do you figure that out?
The model factors in both. And so the picture that I'm looking at, which obviously the radio people can all describe to you, basically has about 20-25% of the population with immunity due to having COVID. And that's exclusively just having COVID. And then there's an overlap between these. And then we have the rest of the population having immunity from the vaccine. And when we reach between 60-70%, we would consider that herd immunity for COVID.
And what does that get us? What does that mean then?
What does that mean? Well, on the 15th, we have reached herd immunity from continuing to be vaccinated, then that means that we can open back up with common sense measures in place. So masking is still going to be in place as we learn more about what does that immunity actually look like? Are hospitalization rates staying low and stable? Distancing is still going to be important for people to follow. But we're going to be able to resume kind of normal activities with these measures in place. And so the blueprint of different sectors are closed in different percentages or only able to open in certain percentages. That's going to go away. And instead, it's going to be replaced by people, using common sense to continue to reduce any transmission of people who may still not have immunity. But the other threshold is really making sure that there's vaccine supply for everyone who wants to get a vaccine, who's eligible, which come the 15th in California, anyone 16 and up can get a vaccine.
I know that in Madera County specifically, throughout this, you guys have kind of, in the beginning, I remember getting a press release that you had to stop vaccines for some time. How are we looking now with vaccine supply in your county and what you're experiencing? And also, I've been reading, it's so interesting to me because I've been reading a lot of stories how around the world, there are countries where the vaccine's not working. But in America, it looks as if our vaccines are working.
Yeah, the data that we have now is showing that the vaccine is doing what we hoped it would do and keeping people out of the hospital in particular, but also reducing our case rates. And so we are really hopeful that as we continue to roll out vaccine, we'll see those case rates continue to decline and we'll see cases in the hospital also declining. Vaccine supply is one of those tricky things. Like any supply chain for people who are in business, if there's one element that goes askew, then we have problems. We've seen this with personal protective equipment or PPE, and now vaccine is the real focus of the supply chain. Sometimes it's about syringes. Most of the time it's about the vaccine itself. There were early hitches when supply was not rolling as it is now, but we have a pretty steady allocation and it's been increasing over time.
You know, one of the hot button things through this whole thing has been masks. And I think you just mentioned masks.
They're not going away.
Are they ever going to go away?
Are they ever going to go away? That's a good question.
Well, you know, on my desk, I've got this magic eight ball, and it's perfect for questions like this. we don't know when masks are going to go away. I assume at some point when we know more about the variants and how that impacts transmission, how well the vaccine performs over time, are we going to need a booster shot? All of those things are still up in the air as we gather data through the vaccination rollout. And masks have been a focused issue for many. I see masking as actually a pretty small price to pay when you add it, compare it to things like people losing their livelihood or their job. If we can all throw on a mask and get our economy, running, then I think it's a worthwhile activity.
You know, and we're talking with Sarah Boss, who's the director of Madera County's Health Department. You mentioned variants, and that's something, too, that comes into play with all of this. We have variants. We have our own variant, I guess, here in California. Then there's the UK variant. There's a variant in India. South Africa has a variant. What do we know about these variants?
So the ones that you're hearing about in the news are a handful of a whole bunch of variants. And they are all being tracked. California has increased significantly kind of the gene sequencing to identify variants among COVID cases. And so we're getting a better and better picture of variants as time goes on. As, research often is, we get a clearer picture as time rolls forward. And with these variants, many of them are more contagious, which is a concern. And so that's why, getting ahead on the vaccination, continuing to do, put our common sense safety measures in place really makes a lot of sense, because what you see in the diagrams of the variants is that many of them, it'll splinter off and here's a variant, but then it dies because a virus needs a host. And so if it's not transmitted from one person to another, then that variant kind of dies on the vine. And so these ones that have continued to take hold are ones that have typically been more contagious because they find more hosts and it gets more of a foothold in the population. So it is still really important for us to follow safety measures even as things open up. I know there's conversations about, oh, I'm going to schedule my party on June 16th. That's the purpose of setting a date was really so that people and businesses could plan. If your business has been closed, we want you to be able to tool up, notify staff, order your supplies, things like that, so that people have a bit of an anticipated timeline. Not having time frames is really frustrating for people. But it doesn't mean that we're just going to all of a sudden go from lots of safety measures to none. It just is a signal that vaccine is working, and we are really hopeful that herd immunity will keep our hospitalization rates low and keep people healthy.
Through this whole process, we've had all these plans from the governor, and we have health directors in every county, I believe, in addition to a state health director. Are all of you on pretty much the same page?
So I'm actually the director, which is an administrative role. And then Dr. Simon Paul is our health officer, which is the medical lead for the county. And so every county in California has both of those, as well as the state. And I think that, we're on calls all the time together and we talk through things. And of course, there's varying viewpoints, different way of looking at the data and approaches to this. But I think that for the most part, we've been able to reach consensus a good part of the time. We are subject to, state law. And so what we've tried to do in Madera County is really look at, what's the science and what's the common sense application of that science in order to keep people healthy and keep people out of the hospital? And how do we provide technical assistance for people to navigate what has turned out to be very complicated guidance around every type of sector so that people really know what they should do and how they should do it safely and reasonably? So, you know, there are lots of opinions, lots of perspectives across the entire globe. There's maybe never been a topic in which every single person on the planet has an opinion, but COVID is that. And so we really have been trying to figure out how do we help people navigate this in a way that really applies common sense.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Our special guest is Sarah Boss. She's the director of the Madera County Department of Health. And Sarah, I got a question for you because Christine and I have been trying to follow this story from the very beginning. And, you know, we have this announcement now about June 15th. And I know some people say that's, you know, it's not soon enough. Some people say maybe it's too soon. We've been trying to follow all the phases and stages and color codes of the governor's plans. You just mentioned you're trying to follow the science. You know, I go online and I see people talking. They say the science is clear. Is the science clear on this?
I think the science is clear in some pieces of this. You know, COVID, admittedly, is a confounding virus. It doesn't follow real standard patterns in terms of when people get it, if they experience any symptoms at all, or lots of symptoms. We know that underlying health conditions is certainly a factor. And if anything, through this, because my expertise is actually in chronic disease prevention, and we talk a lot about COVID, but I think one big lesson that's clear in the science with this is that people really need to visit their doctor on a regular basis, take preventative health screenings. If your cholesterol is high, do something about it. Get to a healthy weight. If you have pre-diabetes, act now to prevent getting it. If you have diabetes, get it under control. These are really important steps for you to be able to not just experience the side effects of those chronic illnesses, but also prevent communicable disease. And so that scientific piece is probably the most substantiated and the one that as a population we have lots of tangible things that we control that we can do something about.
It's very interesting there. What do we think? You know, it's as we start to, some people are getting vaccinated right now. Some people are reaching their full vaccination, those that have had COVID. And as they start to kind of venture out, you know, we've talked about the fatigue of all of this. We're now 16 months in, and some people are fatigued. What's kind of your piece of advice to people as they begin to take maybe some more risks and exposure?
Well, I like the fact that you used risk there, because it's not an all or nothing thing. For us to open back up, what we need to do is really assess the risk of any situation and use what we can control to reduce that risk. So if you have a gathering, the weather's beautiful, have it outside, and people can still test before they come to the gathering and figure out if they may have been exposed to COVID before they come and expose others. Certainly staying home if you're sick. So it's the same things that people have heard throughout this entire year that reduce risk. We need to continue to use that same kind of metric of understanding for continuing to reduce risk. And that reduce risk for COVID and the flu and colds and other communicable diseases as well.
Sarah, here's one for you. Can you explain to me why California and Florida, with two very different approaches, seem to be about in the same place?
I can't answer that question. I think that we are going to learn more over time as research kind of shows us more about the vaccine, the illness, how it's transmitted, what's going on with regards to variants. You know, there were so many different approaches across the globe to COVID, and I don't think we've completely done the research to understand how one approach worked better or worse or the same. It's the same question that we have about different diets, right? You have people who have a plant-based diet and some are healthy and some are not. And then you have people who have a meat-based diet and some are healthy or some are not. And science, we learn more as we learn more. And then we'll discover the things that, we'll be able to answer in the future. But at this point, I don't think I can answer that question.
Well, do you think that by letting states all do their own thing, that will be helpful in studying, that we can study different things and how they were done differently instead of all doing the same thing? Was that better way to go?
It might have this added benefit from a research perspective. I think it has lended to a lot of confusion for folks, and it might have been easier because many people consume their news at a national level if we were all on the same page. But at the same time, you know, transmission of a virus is inherently a local thing. And I have continued to tell people, you know, if you're just tuning into national news, you don't really know what's going on, because what's going on is what's happening in your neighborhood, in your city. And so I think that we'll have the benefit of people researching COVID intensively in every country across the globe. We've never learned more about a single virus in such a short period of time, because there's lots of resources being poured into understanding different approaches. So we're going to have, you know, an entire globe worth of comparisons to make.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's interesting to read about it all right now as it's happening as well. You know, you mentioned the local. How is Madera County doing right now?
Madera County's case rates are continuing to go down. Our adjusted case rate that was reported on Tuesday was 5.1. We're real happy about that. If we continue with that, that puts us into the orange tier on April 20th. And we're, you know, we're really hopeful that this vaccination season, you know, ushers in something other than COVID. I'd love to talk about something that's not COVID.
Yeah, me too.
And think of work that's not COVID. I think we all are tired of it and would love to move on to something else. And I think Madera is heading in the right direction. We're able to give out between 4,000 and 5,000 vaccines just through our health department each week. And we have lots of other healthcare partners that are working alongside Camarena Health, Valley Children's Hospital. And of course, many people who live in Madera or work in Madera, live in Fresno or work in Fresno. And so we really have been working in tandem with our neighbors as well. And things are looking very hopeful.
You know, Sarah, I've got another easy one for you here. What do you think about the idea of these vaccine passports?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's not a hot topic. you know, I've thought a lot about this one, and I haven't quite settled on my opinion. You know, I think it's a great idea for, you know, certainly people to be paying attention to whether or not, you know, what percent of people have been vaccinated in a group. I would like to see it driven by private industry, as opposed to something that is driven by the government, just because, I mean, there's the push and pull of we want to have great data and we want the government to be able to present us great data. But then there's also, you know, privacy aspects and how much control do we want to give to the government regulating what it is that we can and can't do. And that's been a question ongoing through COVID that we've all been grappling with. There's the public good of public health, and important is our ability to be able to exercise our freedoms. And so that's always something that we're going to be grappling with, and I haven't settled on a perfect answer to that question.
I know, it's a tough one. You know, I'm bringing it up because I'm reading about like the Giants are going to open, and they're going to demand that people be vaccinated or have a negative test to get into the game there. But the government kind of is involved here, because I noticed that when it comes to capacity, they allow for more people to go to a game if they have those kinds of restrictions. than if they don't. So it's like the government, although not demanding a vaccine passport, is gone. But if you private business demand it, we'll let more people into your business. So
yeah, it's more like incentivizing what it is that they, you know, we'd like to see. And you know, in the end, I think the most important thing is we encourage people to do their due diligence and learn about the vaccination process. And it's a medical decision, right? So every person needs to make their own individual decision about whether or not they're going to be vaccinated. But from a population perspective and from, you know, being able to open up our economy, as a public health professional, I'd encourage people to get vaccinated. And certainly, you know, take a picture of your registration card so you've got it with you. Because I do think that it's, you know, even if it was completely up to private industry, just due to liability and lots of other reasons, I think that there are a lot of private companies that are going to, at the very least, require testing before participation, if not vaccination.
You know, that you make me think of one more question here, Sarah, and that is the question of why we should get vaccinated. Because I think that oftentimes, you know, when we discuss the topic, it is forgotten of why it's important to get vaccinated.
So in the United States, the American culture, we're very focused on individual health. And we think a lot about health care. And it's very individually focused. And when we have conversations about health at the national level, the state level, oftentimes in years past, it has been really been driven by health care, which is a very individual focus. What we've learned by COVID is really about population health, which is public health. A lot of people didn't even know what a public health department did before COVID. Now I think you all have a reasonable snapshot of part of what we do, but we're always looking at the population. So when you talk about herd immunity, that's what immunizations are about. It's when a certain threshold of people are immunized that we all benefit from the common immunity that we share across the population. And it only works when you reach a certain threshold. So each of us individually make our own individual decisions about whether or not we take the vaccine. But from a population standpoint and our ability to really achieve those low case rates, keep people out of the hospital, it's about us reaching herd immunity together. Part of that has been achieved through transmission, but most of it is being achieved through vaccination.
You know, you said at the beginning of our discussion, too, that, you know, the thing that's interesting about COVID is that you don't know, like, who's going to have more of a response than someone else, who's going to be asymptomatic and who's not going to be asymptomatic and end up in the hospital or whatever. And, you know, one of the things that I think about as well when it comes to this vaccine, and this goes back to the selfishness of it for me, but it also has a public impact, is that, you know, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, they all say our vaccine will keep you out of the hospital. So whether you get it or don't get it, we can keep you out of the hospital, which then impacts, you know, your ability, God forbid you should have a heart attack, to be able to go to the hospital and be treated instead of everybody else being there for COVID.
That's exactly right. And the reason why the measures that were put in place to really reduce transmission, it ultimately trickled down into hospitalization. Our hospitals and our healthcare system were not built for everybody to need intensive care all at the same time. And so, you know, in Madera Community Hospital, it's a relatively small community hospital. They had to double their ICU capacity and still were using capacity in the ER during the surge over, you know, December and January. And it was very concerning. You know, I thought a lot because I actually, you know, saw that myself. I was one of the few people who could be in the hospital and actually see what that looked like. And it was instantly had a profound impact on me about, I need to make sure that I'm careful when I'm driving because I need to not get an accident right now. So I think that as we think about the community as a whole, looking at population health is a really important lens for us to be thinking about because it's about me and my family, and it's about my neighbors, and it's about my community, and my individual decisions have an impact on that whole. It also helps us consider when we look at like reducing our chronic illnesses, these underlying health conditions that have impacted COVID rates. We need to be looking at, do we have walkable communities? Do we have an urban footprint that makes it easy for people to use active transportation? All of these puzzle pieces add up to a healthy population that is able to prevent a lot of acute illness, but we do it together in how we behave as a community, but also the policies that we pass as a community.
Sarah, I want to thank you very much for your time. Been a very enjoyable conversation, and you've helped us out. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Have a great weekend. The sun is out. Get outside. Transmission is low outside.
There you go. Sarah. Thank you so much. Sarah Boss, Madera County Health Department's director.